Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine. Catastrophe in the event of. I welcome Vijay Vaitheeswaran, the energy and green innovation editor at The Economist magazine. Recently, articles in The Economist, in addition to a podcast that Vijay produces about conversations about Ukraine, include commodities, not only the energy commodity, fossil fuel based, but also food security. I begin with in the event of catastrophe, because when and if it passes, there'll be other things to do. Right now, the catastrophe is in everybody's mind because of the deployment of Russian forces, because of NATO's get ready ideas that across the Russian frontier, and also because of bulletins coming out of the U.S. about army units and others being prepared for a catastrophe. Vijay, a very good day to you. What we're looking at here is energy first, always energy first. The expectation is that all commodities will feel the event of the catastrophe. How so? How are they all interrelated? Good evening to you, Vijay.
Good evening, John. Great to be with you again. So there are a couple of things. You're right that energy comes first for a couple of reasons. In the case of any kind of drastic action, such as an all-out war in Ukraine, which will perhaps result in sanctions, almost certainly from the West, that would interrupt flows of energy and contracts for oil and gas and so on. And Russia may well use the energy weapon, which is a pretty harsh thing to do, because even the Soviets didn't do this, but they might cut off the natural gas to Europe. So that's the framework in which we're talking about. And I have to stress, this is an unlikely scenario. But nevertheless, it's one that markets are getting ready for, getting quite apprehensive about, as indeed are geopolitical experts. The reason to look at natural gas is that Europe gets about a third of its natural gas from Russia. And that is an awful lot during a wintertime to suddenly go missing. And that would have, of course, consequences for global natural gas prices as well. The second half of the story is that Russia is one of the world's largest oil exporters. It's part of the so-called OPEC plus oil cartel, in which it makes common cause with the Saudis and other price fixers at the OPEC cartel. And so if Russian oil were to be in jeopardy for some reason, and it could be because the Russians themselves withhold it from the market as a punishment to the West, or maybe due to the sanctions, the traders and other counterparties that normally would buy that oil are somehow hindered from getting that oil by American or Western sanctions, then we would have a significant blow to global commodity markets. People are talking about oil prices going from where they are today, which is a 7-year high of about $90 a barrel. They could skyrocket to $150 if indeed that happened.
Oil and natural gas are in our food, they're in our products such as aluminum, they're in everything we can think of, and Russia contributes to those global demands. The Economist argues that what we're looking at here is an across-the-landscape damage to commodity prices. Is that correct, Vijay?
This is the concern, because Russia is a powerhouse, not just with energy, but a range of minerals, rare earths, as well as agricultural commodities that we can go through a checklist, but among the things that go into electric cars, for example, or you had mentioned aluminum, of course, which is vital to numerous industries, but we can look at the softer commodities, the agricultural commodities, where Russia is an important supplier, and so too is Ukraine. Students of what used to be called geography would know that Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. They have the fantastically rich Chernozem soils, the richest soils in the world. And back when the Soviet Union was basically an economically bankrupt place, the Ukraine fed much of the Soviet Union. And so any invasion, unfortunately, the parts of Ukraine that grow the greatest harvests are the ones most susceptible to an invasion. And so might very well be taken off world markets. Between the two countries, over a quarter of the world's wheat, for example, is produced. It's the number one producer of wheat. And North Africa, for example, is reliant on Russian wheat and other countries as well. So I think we would see a significant impact at a time when actually we're seeing relatively low stores of agricultural commodities around the world. It's a bit of a precarious time, just like it is in a lot of commodities where we've seen supply shortages, supply chain interruptions, and relatively low inventories, as in the oil market.
The embargo possibility of energy, let's focus on that, because it would cost Russia's reserves a great deal of money, what is lost as opposed to what can be gained by present prices. You identify that there is a possible backdoor for Russia that would supplement its need for cash and other resources, and that's China. What would that look like? What do we understand is the possibility?
So the relationship with Russia and China is obviously very fraught and complicated. A simple-minded analysis would say that, well, if there's a crisis, then, you know, the Chinese would also not get their supplies. And indeed, they might see Russia as an unreliable supplier if Russia were to initiate the cutoff of gas to Europe, for example, because China also gets gas from Russia, from their newer fields in Siberia. There's piped gas and as well as liquefied gas, LNG it's called, that's shipped to China. And you might think China would get very skittish. In fact, The experience of history suggests that the Chinese actually see that as a possible opportunity to get closer to an important supplier. Last time when Russia cut off the gas for a day or two to Ukraine as part of saber rattling, the Chinese signed a massive natural gas contract with the Russians saying, thank you very much. They probably got a better deal on the gas, to be honest, because of the troubles Russia was having with Europe. And so in a similar way, we might very well see them opportunistically try to get a better deal and get more of a resource. And when it comes to agricultural commodities, even if there are sanctions that the West places on Russia, which will almost certainly happen, the Chinese can find ways of getting around those sanctions since their banking system and their financial markets are not fully integrated with the West. We anticipate that they will do some backdoor deals, demanding a hefty discount, of course, for the privilege from the Russians to get commodities. And Iran will probably do the same as well, as a pariah state from the West. They're not too bothered about sanctions from Washington.
In your conversation on the podcast Money Talks, with Daniel Yergin in particular, Vice President IHS Market and author of The New Map Energy, you address workarounds. Although Mr. Yergin emphasizes the market is tight, is LNG sufficient? There was that burst of LNG flowing to Europe in the last time the Russian prices were wobbly. Can it happen again? Is it enough?
So the holistic answer is that if all the gas were to be cut off, which is an enormous amount, a third of Russia's supplies, roughly a third, a bit less now because they've actually been turning the screws and reducing the flows through Ukraine for a while now. The answer is it will be difficult, but Granny doesn't have to freeze in Munich. What would happen is we'd see an immediate price response. Prices would go through the roof for natural gas, and we would get more supplies of LNG. There are adequate supplies on the high seas that, for example, China, South Korea, Japan, they buy an enormous amount of LNG. It's been a relatively mild winter. So we've already seen, in fact, in response to the high prices that Europe has for natural gas, unrelated to the Ukraine problem, we've had an energy shock in Europe the last couple of months. You and I have talked about this on the show. And we've seen the Chinese say they want to dump dozens of cargoes of LNG to the highest bidder, which are already basically forming an armada of liquefied natural gas coming to Europe. That's part of the solution. Europe also has a lot of gas in storage. Now, like a strategic reserve, you can call it, or at least a commercial reserve. This is lower than historical norms, but it's still plenty to last them a few months if there were to be an embargo that went through to spring. It wouldn't make any sense for Putin to do any kind of embargo longer than that, because by the time we get to April, natural gas use in Europe collapses. The winter's over and the use in heating goes away. So you tend to find the leverage goes away for Putin as well. It would only make sense for him to do this in the next couple of months. And they do have enough gas in storage combined with LNG to survive a difficult winter if, in fact, it happened.
Looking forward, the rosy scenario that we avoid catastrophe, Mr. Jurgen, and your remarks as well on the podcast, highly recommended, is that what we're looking now is an opportunity to reorganize where we get energy and what kind of energy. Did I hear that correctly? Renewables are part of the future.
That's certainly true, but I would emphasize that Europe's excessive reliance on Russian gas, which has been known for 20 years at least, and they have already made some progress, right? Part of the reason why this crisis will not be as bad as it could have been or would have been back, for example, in 2009, when, again, it was a major confrontation between Russia and Europe over Ukraine, and you cut off the gas for a couple of days. Europe has made its markets much more vibrant. It's built a web of interconnectors on gas, for example, so that if one market is cut off, like the Baltics or Germany, they can get gas from a different direction from these new LNG terminals that are set up all over Europe. So it's more robust, and that's good, but they need to do much more to diversify is the first thing. Diversify off of Russian gas onto other gas, which would be the imported stuff, the LNG, but also onto other fuels. And this is where renewables will play a much bigger role going ahead. We're not going to see a lot more coal, nor a whole lot of new nuclear because of climate change and other concerns in Europe. So the big opportunity is to get away onto other kinds of clean energies. The second part of this is that they need to do a lot more on the innovation side, demand side, that, you know, demand can aggregate and respond to price spikes. And so this is where a lot of the new technologies of digital grid, demand aggregation, and so on, they go hand in hand with some of the new clean technologies. We're seeing this in California. Companies like Google are beginning to offer these smart thermostats that can aggregate demand and cut back when there's a crisis. They'll even pay the customer in order to cut back on your AC use at peak, for example, and save the grid from a blackout. So these are the things that Europe needs to do much more of to get off of its current precarious position.
DJ Vitaswaran, the Energy and Green Innovation Editor for The Economist magazine, in the event of catastrophe. I'm John Batch.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.